This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay, this is for you. All right, so then, all right, we'll change agenda at top to minutes. And are there any other corrections to the minutes? Oh, okay. And any other corrections? All right, seeing none, is there a motion to approve the minutes as corrected? Okay, is there a second? Thank you. I ask for unanimous consent to approve the minutes as corrected. Are there any objections? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Okay. And then with that, we'll go right into our updates from GTCI Working Group. Today we have Barbara Romano with us to give a housing update.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for inviting me to the meeting to give you an update of the progress and work underway by the Housing Committee. On our committee, we have two graduate students, Kristen Straley and Annie O'Toole. And then other members, we have Missy Reiser, Victor Younger, Denise Thompson, Gary Stewart, and not joining this evening is Susan Riley and Marty Rauser. They just happen to be out this evening. So the update and some progress or our commitments or one that Campus Life Enterprises Services is very committed to always offering family-friendly housing. So Missy Riker is the driving the housing coordinator for Maplewood, Hasbrook, Thurston, Fort Hughes, and 13 South Ave. We acquired that this summer. It was a fraternity house, and we did go in and have that slightly updated and renovated. We have a very short window, but we do have all male graduate students living in that property this fall, and we look forward to similar situation next year. Off-campus housing has done a tremendous amount of work over the last year and a half, and Denise Thompson is representing that office here this evening. They have hired peer advisors to help them in that office. They have a strong commitment to training, and they're always looking for new peer advisors, so hopefully that they can respond quickly to student needs. They've also produced an off-campus living bi-weekly newsletter, and there are a couple samples here. I don't know, do any of you receive this newsletter? You're finding it, well, worthwhile with updates. So if there are topics or items that you'd like the off-campus housing to address, bring it to Denise's attention, and they will touch base on those topics in their writing. The other piece that they made progress on is they have posted neighborhood descriptions to the off-campus living graduate and professional website. One thing when you talk about distance, what we talk about in our committee, it's interesting with some of the properties, because it really depends on what point you're coming into the campus and what destination you're going to. So where some properties may be listed as 1 mile, it may be a little bit more than that, give or take where you're going to on campus. The other piece, OSHA goes out and they do presentations for newly admitted students and to departments that ask. So that is ongoing and has been happening for quite some time. They are also redesigning the off-campus living website, including information specific to the graduate students. With that, a lot of work in that area, and I think you're continuing to do work, right? So what Denise just said is that the new website will go live at the end of May. they published the Journey to Off-Campus Living with a list of best practices to assist students in the off-campus search process. So I think that's good. I did run into a landlord who is out at University Park, and this fall he had mentioned that a grad student had gone out there with a big checklist. Part of it might be because he was living in a university property, but was really taken back by that, but not it ever. That's great. So there are tools out there that students can use. And they've also posted the New York State tenant rates on the off-campus living website for students. Those are many of the things that have been requested of this committee. So, there were two topics that our committee was asked to address, which we did address, but after conversations with that transportation committee, we thought it was best to move the topic of drastically reducing the cost of parking for residents that have worked in Maplewood to provide free parking for visitors. I do know up at Maplewood that now they do have a park mobile there. I don't know what that fee is running, so I don't know if they reported that out when they presented. I believe they already presented, right? And then the other piece was the Ithaca car share location at Hasbrook. So currently, there is a location out in front of Robert Purcell on Jessup Road. Today, I did just receive word from Victor that the graduating community has been in conversation with the car share, who is very interested in doing a survey there. So this is fresh, this news really just from like within the hour that we received. So I haven't touched back or circled back with Helen Spay on the transportation committee, so that may be something that's an outcome of the work that they're doing. Some of the work in progress that we'll see going on now and over the next year is developing a web presence on the Living at Cornell website and the new student shop Cornell WDU. So that's the work that we're doing in the next couple months. And then Campus Life Enterprise Services will continue to maintain and improve Maplewood Park to the degree that the improvements and maintenance are affordable. Last year we did install a new playground for the students out there, and we have had to do some roof replacements, so they are investing in that for as long as we have that property as we move forward. Many of you may be aware of, Maplewood is really coming to the end of its life. So we are in conversations with senior leadership and trying to figure out where we're headed over the next year or two. And then some work in progress. Currently, focusing on creating a better community. Denise and Julie Page attend the Landlord Association meeting, and Denise speak to that a little bit because some of the topics that they are bringing up may not all always entail having graduate students or professional students attending them. The topics aren't always, there's unique topics. Can you talk about that?
Well, the Landlord Association, you have to be a member and Cornell pays for our membership program. And sometimes we'll talk about things like taxes that are really irrelevant to us, but other times we'll talk about tenants' rights and what's happening specifically within their residence. So it's helpful that when I'm there, I can also give what I heard talked about, and then I can also provide them the information because I do speak weekly with our Assistant General, or Assistant Attorney General Mike Danner, so I'm able to also give his opinion on many things. So those meetings are very helpful. They will keep them out as a representative, but also as an ally for the students. But someone who isn't going to be argumentative with them.
And then there is a graduate student who, Sean Hilton, who attends the IPCA Rental Authority Commission, and I know that he reports back on occasion to Julie Page to help out some of these conversations. Also joining us on our committee is Jeremy Stewart, and early on, he has really advocated for trying to have students who are interested in attending some of these neighborhood meetings, that it's very beneficial because the committee needs to really listen to the students. And Jeremy, I don't know if you'd like to elaborate on that at all.
Yeah, thank you, Barbara. So how many of you guys know what a great town has? Okay, yeah, y'all get it. You guys have a lot of influence and power that you might not realize. You have people who are elected to represent you on county council, and as well as county legislature. You pay taxes in one way, shape, or form. And I think we can also get people here to meet me to make it easier for you folks. I doubt there's anybody on campus more busy than the people in this room right now. And so I know that you have very little time, and if you wanted to get the mayor to come by, Denise referenced the state assistant attorney general who deals with landlord tenant relations. We've had Tinder come to meetings. He would love to come and present a meeting like this. Then you could ask somebody directly responsible for these things the questions. Can be answered without you having to go anyplace. And any other thing that we can help you with in the Office of Community Relations at Cornell. Our job is to be a liaison between the campus and the community, and anything I can do to help, especially students. I don't want you guys wasting your time beating your head against the wall trying to find something out. So please never hesitate to call our office. Denise and I are both involved in something called the International Town Ground Association. If you ever want to put a question to that group on something that you're curious about, people are dealing with the same stuff all throughout the country. You get answers from all over the place, and we're here to assist, and please use it as a resource.
So on that note,
Jeremy,
I just wanted to put another plug-in for the off-campus housing office. One thing that they do, when they list rental properties, they confirm that there is a certificate of occupancy for that property, which other websites, Craigslist, or however students are finding out newspaper listings, may not necessarily be happening. I know Kristen has shared some interesting stories about what she has seen or other students have experienced. So I just want to mention that. And the other thing I'd like to mention is last Friday, our committee was fortunate. We had real estate come in and do a presentation on the East Hill Village, which had a survey also go out to thousands of students and faculty, community members, and talked briefly on their findings, but didn't talk about what the future or what the future they'd like to see out of East Hill. They didn't give us a timeline or anything, but that's what's in the works and planning there. So on that, we can open the floor for questions. Yes?
I'm hoping you can elaborate a little bit on any information that you have on the planned development at East Hill Plaza. There's been a lot of rumors going around, and I just would like to see what information you have about the development.
What they had shared with us is the layout of East Hill and where they would place the residential property. They did have diagrams that talked about how Dunkin' Donuts from the Rite Aid was parcels, or not Cornell-owned parcels, and the car wash is not a Cornell-owned parcel, but how they envisioned both retail in there, and then housing that would, it sounded like tiered housing, different levels, so it's not all high-end, and it's going to be open to anyone, and that there'll be rental properties up there, and then long term, it sounded like longer term, that there might be housing for them.
Yeah, this project is so far from the starting gate, it's not even, it's
so far out there. There's discussions right now. Should a private developer be the driver on this? Should we design what we want at IG Cornell and then tell the developer what to build? So there's interest at the trustee level and then, of course, internal staff. And I wish it was further down the track, but it's not even at the study date. And this would be a good group to visit as we go out because it would be fun to get your feedback and look at the plan and what's possible. But the internal debate is intense and the trustees are interested.
Following the focus groups, there were some concerns based on information people who attended the focus group got that the housing wouldn't actually be very affordable for graduate students, or that if it wasn't affordable for graduate students, they could lead to rent increases around UCL Plaza. And I don't know if you've heard any information on what plan for. I guess if it's not even close to starting again, you don't
Yeah, and I wish it was closer because we can only benefit by being fully transparent on the process. I mean, I've been working in the administration building and sometimes people will say something like, well, Cornell has a secret agenda on this, and I say, you know, I wish we had our act together enough to have a secret agenda.
One of the big issues with Maplewood eventually closing and sort of being phased out as you speak is to sort of a reduction in the amount of on-campus funding available for graduate students, meaning that graduate students are less pushed into the community where there's already very low availability in terms of rental spaces. And my understanding is when these conversations were happening about 2 years ago was an intention to wait to see about the new developments on State Street, about whether or not that was going to ultimately be occupied slash like heavily utilized by graduate students. So I'm kind of curious what the story is with that, how many graduate students are able to afford for $1,000 a rental in that apartment complex, and what does the sort of phasing out of Maplewood mean in terms of where graduate students are going to continue?
One thing is we're not really aware of who is living down there at this point in time. And I know that they have flyers or postings with their rent, so that would have to be some work we have to do, maybe we'd have to do to explore that, so we're not, really not sure if the ratio of undergrads to grads or just community members. So,
my understanding is, and forgive me, I didn't want for grad students to be professional students altogether, but my understanding is that it's predominantly professional students that do live there. There are very few community members that live in that area, and there's also some older undergraduate students that may live there. But it is very pricey, and they do have some agencies. Yes.
My question was, I can't remember the answer to the compositing. I thought that the agency needs to look at some like, summary from that information. I'm not sure if that's actually available for the classes here. But Gloria, if you had any of your information from like the graduate and professional community, you know, how they felt about their housing and how we're going forward with the maple closing, the new building, anything, what's the situation if you had any quantitative.
We do not have any. And when the real estate committee presented the other day, they just presented at a very high level.
Thank you.
Right. Right now, we don't have a plan. We know that Maplewood needs to close sooner than later. What internally we've talked about is working with those students that live there. Where the time is, we're having a transition plan over to Hasbrook. One strategy that we did a couple years ago. So Missy really works with families to make sure families are placed. And each and every year we've been able to place the families if they're submitting their housing requests early on in the time frame. And then we took some of the other two-bedroom apartments that had in the past been slated for families, and we created what we call a 60-40, where we created two graduate students. We call them 60-40 because one of the bedrooms is larger than the other bedroom. And that way we were able to accommodate more graduate students. So with Hasbrook, I don't know if that's the route we'll go, but that's a route that we'll certainly look at as we move forward.
It seems like what you're trying to do with the website is really compile resources. I was wondering if you, besides like listing New York City tenant laws and other things, if there was anything you guys did to kind of adjudicate or advocate for grad students with landlords, because I know in the past I had trouble with landlords. I saw a house on my street Sunday, and it was a problem that people on the street had said still been living here for years and years. So those kinds of issues that anecdotally I just have on all the time.
Well, so I am very limited to what our legal counsel will allow me to do. Any intervention I do is usually on the down low, and it's not necessarily known to everybody, but I do for one student I may not be able to do for another student. So when I do hear about these types of things, I go contact the building department, so I actually will be calling to find out what's going on with that. Unfortunately, we can't advocate as much as I'd like.
And there's no, like, legal way of, like, so you can get very, you know, the landlord if you might want to.
So, here you go, right? Penn State has a great review site that they're at CSA. My life is very comprehensive. I ask a lot of questions, much more than you would be answered. I think they ask a lot of relevant questions. City Council will not allow me to rank landlords. So if you come into my office, the best you're going to get out of me is, maybe you should keep looking. So maybe you should keep looking is my way of encouraging. But if the GTFA could get legal counsel or whatever to approve it, go for it. I would be a great resource to you.
Maybe a way of actually providing migration aiding, especially in the and member violations. You don't have to pass judgment on that manual, but you just provide the data information. That can teach yourself.
But I don't manage violations. That would be a building department.
Well, then just direct me to the data.
So I do. I encourage students to be able to ask for greater compliance. The building department. And the city of it has a requirement where any rental property, duplex is supposed to be inspected every 5 years, anything other than the duplex is inspected every 3 years. Cornell Housing, along with attorney sororities, co-ops are inspected every year. And they go in top to bottom and verify that the apartment that is building, from the basement boilers to the chimney fluid, has been inspected. What you will find is that there are some properties that have been inspected since I got out of high school. So those properties do not list on my website, but you may find them because you all use Craigslist and other databases that don't do that check and balance. But on my website, I do list the building department's phone number and the link to that database. So I try to give you all the information. What I would love is that every student at Cornell, whether you're an undergraduate, graduate, professional, has to sit through an hour of my talking at you. I think it would be worthwhile to hear, you know, a lot of what I have to say to make your life successful.
But if one of these folks have a problem with their landlord, they call the city, right? Mm-hmm. They call the city building, and they're responsible for responding.
Exactly.
So Have any of you ever talked to
him? I have.
How did they have?
He only had a refrigerator for the house when he walked. My mother was training him for 20 minutes. And then
he left. Any
problems? No, that was whatever. I did send like three in email to everybody and tweeted. I didn't know the answer to the
police. How did you tell me about that?
So I didn't see any living going to the PE civil engineering. We know for the stairwell was installed properly, so the weed was in the right place. So we actually applied the violation of the annoying words corrected very promptly. And then they were, we
did have the engineer.
Okay, so one more question.
I just wanted to go back to talking about Maplewood. Mostly because when I was applying to Cornell and when I was about to come here, it's quite intimidating to try to look for a place, especially when you're on a continent pretty far away. So I was just wondering, now because we've reduced, getting to Maplewood to Hasbrook was a similar process. I'm just wondering, now that that's closing down, if there is, has been any thought to about how do we help out and that students get a place here? Or, because I'm assuming those will be disproportionately affected by this. Those students will be.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
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 But I was wondering if there's any way just to help them out, considering they can't come in, they can't check places to see whether it's something they can move into. Because the year that I came here, a lot of my friends made mistakes about where they'd go live. You keep walking in and think, that's it? Where's the rest of it? Right? So I was wondering this, because at least with Maplewood and Hasbrook, they sort of know what they're getting into.
So I know that you work on a buddy system, right? Or trying to set up a buddy system. And I think they ran into challenges where the landlord is not actually meet with the renter.
Right. So because you're finding a legal document, it's difficult for the person that could be going to look at it for you because you want to make sure there's no promises being made and everyone's kind of being above board, and some landlords don't really care for that. But we will work with ISO a little bit more, and if you'd like to come to my office, I would like to talk to you a little bit more. Definitely, and I want to be as supportive as I can, but if you try to work something out. I know that for ISO and working with Dan LeMay, I came in and did early hours one day with students, international students could call in and have time to speak with me. I was like in at like 5 in the morning and no one called. So it is, you know, it's tough to try to provide services when you're trying to do them and no one utilizes them.
Very fun to use. Really expensive. It's really expensive.
Oh.
To call people.
Oh, okay.
It's easier to
Yeah. Even if it's, yeah, it's like a factor of 10 cheaper to call from the U.S. dial than to call it. It's weird, but... yeah, no, yeah, I think that's, yeah, I was just saying for my clarity.
Maybe I could work with the two of you to figure out something, you know.
Okay. So, all right, let's thank Rosa Havager for their time. And all right, and this takes us into reports of officers and committee updates. So for executive committee, I have an update, personal update. I will be leaving Ithaca, actually, for April. By our charter and bylaws, Catherine will then be chair of the main GPSA meetings. I will still be emailing, calling into meetings here at Ithaca, and fulfilling all my other roles as president, but for chairing the meeting, it works better if the chair is actually sitting in the room. So our EVP will be stepping up to be the chair of future meetings. And going along with that, speaking to Jim Blair on the University Assembly, he pointed out that my vote on the University Assembly comes to me as an ex officio vote as chair. Since Catherine will be acting as effective chair of the meeting, I would like to ask for a motion to approve her to have my vote at the UA. So she would essentially be another UA representative so that she would receive my ex officio vote as president. So is there a motion for that or questions? Okay. All right. So there's a motion. Is there a second? Second. All right. So I guess we'll do this by placards to make it as efficient as possible. All those in favor of approving Catherine to have my ex officio vote, then she'll be acting as president in my absence. Okay. Oh, I should have clarified the voting members, though. All right. And are there any opposed? All right. Great. Then the motion carries. Catherine will receive my vote as of March 24th until the end of the semester. And I do apologize for this. I know it created no end of inconveniences, and it was not my choice originally. But anyway, so any other updates for the executive committee?
No.
Okay. Operations and staffing. Okay. Appropriations?
There are two updates. The first is that the Biden funding cycle is going to be reviewing application in the fall. So application will be out sometime next week for people who are interested to apply, any groups that are interested to apply for Biden funding. It should be out next week, hopefully. I mean, I'll send out an email to everyone saying when it's sent out. You'll have like a month or so to submit a free application saying how much your monetary request, and then you'll have to September to submit the final full request, which will contain the all supporting documents required. I'll send out an email because it's easier. So with regard to that, the GPSA is also violent funded, and so the committee chairs are supposed to at some point send me what their budget typically for a year would be. And so that I can put in the GPSA request to the appropriation committee. I'll send an email for that too, but I just want people to know.
Yeah. Okay. Can you clarify what is required for a new group to become
violent funded? Yes, so for a new group to become violent funded, they need to find a position which contains signatures of 10% of graduate students, so that's about 750 this year, I would think. There's about 10,200. So you have to get select 750 graduate student signatures along with their ID and submit it with your application. And before starting this petition, you might need to talk to me so that I can help you draft the petition and help you with any other questions. I mean, if you're eligible or if there are other things that we need to consider before applying for funding.
Okay. So for communications, Megan can't be here. She told me to make an announcement that they're currently looking for any type of news or events to be included in the April buzz. So please contact Megan if you have anything you'd like to include. And for Finance Commission, Juan also cannot be here. He emailed me an update. The deadline for the last budget request of the academic year will be April 3rd. There's going to be a budget workshop day on April 11th. It's Saturday. The time and location are to be determined. And the deadline for the annual budget request for next academic year is April 24th, which is the last Friday of April. So that is the update from Huang. So now, student advocacy. And back to your words.
So back to your award nomination letters are due in 2 weeks. Once again, I will be sending out one final reminder email to everybody. Please forward these emails to, or continue forwarding these emails to your various graduate student constituencies, as well as all of your friends and everybody else. We want to send letters. So, yes.
Diversity International Students?
So,
and programming board? For the Sustainability Committee, we are looking to host sponsor pizza at TGIF in order to raise awareness about the Green Labs Greenhouse initiatives, as well as, you know, the Sustainability Committee itself. We are looking for volunteers to help flyer at that event, and we're also looking for volunteers who will be here over summer to help with some potential training workshops and things of that nature. So if you're interested in getting involved with the Sustainability Committee, please email me. I'm always looking for more volunteers. We've been Ellen Sweet and Aaron Moore, I believe her name is, have been attending all of our meetings. They work in the Office of Sustainability, and they are very eager to be working with graduate students. So, and then, I feel like I have another update for that. So, with that then, we'll move on to Resolution 7. So, because I am a sponsor for this resolution, I will be yielding the floor to Ian, who will chair this portion of the meeting.
So, Richard, one of the sponsors recap the support of the
Yeah. So, do you want to recap the, and I can go over the amendments since I
Sure. I guess the recap is we're trying to propose a new plan or suggestions to the administration about what we think could be done better to facilitate communication between graduate students and administration. And this is what we propose. Well, this is with the amendments that we had since last time. Do you want to go over the amendments?
Yeah. So the last meeting, there was a couple amendments introduced, and we deferred the vote to give us time to formulate that amendment. So there's a few in here, so I decided to break them up and number them, but to get into that, so we will go through first these amendments and then move on to general, and Christine has asked to have her name attached as a sponsor of the resolution, so that's not currently a numbered amendment, but we'll include that as the final one for it. So, Ian, you'll...
So, should we open it up to the amendment, or are you going to recap them?
Okay, I can recap the individual amendments too. Officially, you are now chair, so I can recap the amendments. So amendment one was to clarify in the results clause, we state that we believe that keeping the large body of graduate students out of the discussion was in violation of shared governance, our belief in what shared governance should be. So we included a few clauses from the charter which sort of explains what shared governance is. So amendment one, whereas the GPSA charter states in section 2.01 that the GPSA shall have authority to examine the university policies that impact graduate professional school students, the GPSA shall have the authority to make recommendations to the appropriate bodies, university administrators, concerning these matters. The GPSA shall be consulted in respect to the modification and development of non-academic policies which directly affect graduate professional school students. And in section 4.02c, membership shall consist of representatives selected from each graduate field of professional school, hereafter referred to as field representatives, voting members. So this was the first amendment, and should we vote on these?
I think this was an amendment that we had last time.
Okay.
I didn't have the order that they made, or are we going to approve? Does anyone have a problem with the amendments as they were proposed? I guess that's one
of the
things. Yeah. Could we just hit the other amendment and throw batch?
Yeah.
That's the first time I could see that, but I can't really tell what the other ones are.
Okay. So the second amendment, and my reasoning behind numbering all these is that they could be approved individually, so we wouldn't have to, since people might have more opinions on this than others.
Okay, so can I propose a motion?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Propose to, what's the language to use? Motion to approve the first amendment?
Okay, call the question on the first amendment.
Okay.
So, there's a motion to, so, well actually I'm not sure, I'm allowed to motion. I motion to call the question on Amendment 1. Is there...
So, is anyone opposed to approving that motion?
Do we need a second?
Oh, we need a second. Okay.
No.
Alright.
So,
Amendment 1 is approved.
So confusing.
Alright. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out which way to separate one.
Ethic research.
Okay.
Logically.
Alright. The second amendment, that was this one is not proposed in meetings, proposed in between meetings, still needs to be approved as an amendment, was to clarify the purpose of the official memorandum. So both statements pretty much read very similarly, so they're considered as one amendment. This memorandum will represent a more comprehensive representation of graduate professional student opinion to aid the shaping of new policy, will serve as a record of Cornell's efforts towards greater transparency, and will aid continuity within the GPSA itself. The other section, which clarifies the first memorandum, states this memorandum will represent the opinion. In the second version, this result clause is if the administration does not agree to hold the meeting of the voting members. This memorandum will represent the opinion of student leaders consulted, but not necessarily the opinion of graduate professional students across the campus. We'll show Cornell's continued commitment to transparency and trust in student leaders to handle sensitive information, and will aid in continuity within the GPSA itself. So,
is there a motion to approve this amendment?
Okay. Second.
There's going to be individual discussion.
Yeah.
Does anyone have any ideas on the issues that I'd like to discuss?
Motion to call the question?
So, all those in favor of approving the Second Amendment?
And a clarification, so voting members will be the ones to vote on amendments and the resolution itself. This one was proposed at the last meeting, was just to add the general thing. We put this at the end of most resolutions or every resolution, just saying that it should be, who it should be sent to. So, resolved that this resolution be sent to President James Gordon, President Michael Elizabeth Garrett, Dean of Students Ken Huzzle, Dean of the Graduate School Barbara New, Dean of the Law School Eduardo Penialver, Dean of the Johnson Graduate School of Management Sumitra Dutta, and Dean of the College of Veterinary Medicine Michael Kotlikoff.
If I was being picky, I would put semicolons separating individuals and commas separating names and titles.
Are you picky, Ms. Cole?
I'm being somewhat picky.
Okay.
Bob's not here, so I have to
So basically, I guess I would say that we don't really need the semicolons just because it's not being title separated name, it is just their title name, so it's like saying President comma Gordon would be a little bit awkward as opposed to just stating President Gordon, and we've in the past sort of said Dean of Graduate School Dean Barbara New as a full title plus name. So yeah. Okay, we'll use semicolons. Okay, we will use semicolons for the list.
Yeah,
okay. Because this is a resolution targeting transparency not just for graduate students but for graduate and professional students, and Dean News does not actually have authority over professional school students. So if we want to represent all.
So there is going to be this change where professional programs are going to be delegated to the colleges from the grad school. So for example, art and architecture, Master of Architecture is going to move, I think, and there are some other programs like Power Engineering, they might move some programs into Power Engineering. So then we might have to move to the resolution we tend to go into.
Do you
think that currently? Yeah, they are different. They've been approved. So like MR is in the registration, everything happens through there are some programs that are being dedicated to the colleges, and we might need to include those in names too.
Okay. Well, for the purposes of this. Oh, yes. We do not currently have a provost. We have a vice provost. Yeah. Oh, well, alright. Does anyone know the name of the interim provost? Oh, Jen Arden. Okay. So we will put this after President-elect Beth Garrett.
K-A-T-Z.
Harry, is that?
Yeah.
And now I reveal that I don't. Okay. I purposely left middle initials out for consistency. Okay. So, interim provost here. Okay.
So the programs that are moved into the professional college, like the college itself, have they been moved officially by now? Like, Mark, Council of Architecture?
So that has been moved. Delegate. Okay. We're not saying move. We're saying delegate.
Okay.
We can take it back.
Yeah.
Go up.
Yeah, but so then we have to address them too, right? Because they are with the individual colleges, and we don't have like the general commission doesn't take them.
That's a good question. I don't think we've thought about in terms of these kind of issues.
So I think that for now, as of you know, this past year, this would be active, so I think we'll keep it to the show.
But all colleges still have PhD programs within the graduate school.
That is true, but the master's, like MH, for example, is more than 900 people moving to the College of Engineering and not under that school. They're in the past, but they will be administered, and that's happening.
Okay.
Could we just add at the end?
And all other roads. Yeah. Party? And all of the relevant administrators.
Yeah.
Okay. There we go. And I guess we need to get rid of the pen. All right.
Is that a point of discussion, or can we have a motion to approve this as a manager? Okay. I'm not sure I can say that. Okay. So we pull this in favor of approving this amendment. Pull those opposed.
Okay. And now we have to. So those are the major. What did I just do? There we go. Those are the major amendments in terms of text. Let's see where the next one was. So this was the other amendment. This is just sort of a point of information that the working group we are citing here was not referred to as the Workers' Compensation Working Group. It was referred to as the Graduate Student Injuries Working Group. And this amendment is just clarifying that for historical purposes that this is what the working group that we are complaining about not having access to was actually called in dirt while it was around. So.
By unanimous consent.
You see why I do that. So the Fifth Amendment goes along with adding the deans of the professional schools and to the list of who it should be sent to. So we might have another crisis here, but this is basically just saying wherever we put, wherever before said the Cornell Graduate School, now it says the Cornell Graduate School, comma, the professional schools, to for them to be included in this resolution. Okay. Well, these are all tiny, so I'll just do it and accept all changes at the end. Sixth Amendment. This one is sort of a language change, but essentially before we had included academic policy in these resolved clauses. However, after I included the clauses from the charter, I realized that the charter specifically states non-academic policy. So, that has now been changed in the resolution to reflect what currently states in our charter. So.
Okay.
All right. Okay. And then, Seventh Amendment is just a couple of grammatical changes. Todd got his hands on this resolution, and he did his usual grammatical fixes, so nothing major in terms of language here.
Can I just ask something about this? I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think at 9.9 period, at the end of the whereas clause, you may need that to be a colon. Someone back to me on that. I think in the result there, you use a colon before going into a list. So,
okay. I think we can include this with general language and grammatical part amendment. So any
anyone opposed to the general grammatical amendment?
Technically, you would be approving that amendment.
Yeah.
And then you can approve the actual full amendment. Sorry. Robert's rules are annoying, but they're designed so that you can actually make decisions in a group.
Okay.
So voting on the amendment to the amendment, and we have a motion.
Motion to approve.
To vote by unanimous, which anyone opposed to that amendment? Seeing none, that's approved.
Now the amendment.
And after that amendment, motion. Motion, second. Second. Voting by unanimous consent. Seeing none, no opposed, that one's approved.
Okay. So that, and then the final amendment would be to add, oh, it's not on here.
Yeah.
I
know it's down at the bottom. I don't know if you have it.
Probably not.
Yeah, no.
Okay. And then the final amendment, the final amendment before the meeting happened would be adding Christine's name as a sponsor of the resolution. All right, so that's all.
Any discussion, any points on the general amendment as a whole? I mean, the resolution.
I think the amendment we approved was taken, but I can't find. Is that a semicolon or a colon?
It's now a colon.
Okay. Can't quite see.
Okay. Motion to call question.
Okay, so voting on the resolution, all those in favor, raise your hand.
Resolution's been in the works for a while, so happy to see that it is passed. Okay. So now we will move into a 20-minute breakout session on advisor-advisee relations to sort of talk about, few guiding questions we had for this was, how many students in your department or field? Well, first off, would you describe your relationship with your advisors being the relationship with a boss or the relationship with someone who's advising you and helping you along your study? Do you know of students in your field or department who currently have a very, very bad relationship with their advisor? And if so, do those students know what resources are available for them and who they should contact? And any other questions on what the GPSA could do to try and help improve advisor-advisor relations across campus. So the idea behind this is pretty much the person with the most influence over our experiences at Cornell is our advisor, and that's true for many fields, probably not all fields, but for many fields that is the case. And so, of course, that's a very sort of ground-level type thing. So influencing it from the central perspective of the GPSA is not something that's easy to do, but I think it is worth discussing, at least in the context of do students at least know what resources are available out there. So we will break into our standard sections for this discussion. We'll do 15 minutes of discussion, then we'll reconvene for 5 minutes of discussion as a group.
I don't even know what to do. Like, what do I do? Usually I know what to meet with. What am I meeting with
now? Just sort of like, you know, we're trying to figure out the guiding question here. What's your relationship? What do people in your department see advisors at? What resources are available? That's kind of the purpose of it. Highlight whether or not they know.
No, I'm not. Yeah. Yeah, I'm also a Okay, I guess I can hear.
Everyone, we're going to go ahead and reconvene.
Yes.
So, thanks everyone. I know that my section had a very good discussion on the topic at hand, so we'll go around the room now, and it's just someone from each section to sort of summarize briefly what was discussed. So, I'll start with one side of the room. So, if I can call it back over. Okay. So, this is a good job. All right.
And also, like, we're also thinking about a peer session or a peer pairing of students so that, you know, all these affordable cases that are well known by people are, you know, because you can tell the students that what they're getting into.
Okay.
I mean,
you're saying,
I mean, there's
just sort of like a pre-session of saying, okay, this is the requirement, this is the people for here, this is the classes that you should take if you're looking at all that. But also to say, okay, so if you're interested in any particular student, here's the here are the students and you should have open discussion with them. So more close. So that, you know, if someone's like, I want to do this professor, and this professor is well known for never answering emails and they're completely regarding all their students until they leave, then you can just, you know, everyone can let them know so that they don't like one or two students just waiting around.
Okay. So, oh.
And then we that's kind of those who start interested in this weekend. If you're interested in teacher advisors, our field trip is charged to match up that. You go out with, you have dinner on the department dining with only grad students, and then you meet the party afterwards. And it's all basically your chance as a prospective student to get like inside look and talk to the advisors, the students who advise you. And I think that's what they advise you.
Okay. So we'll move on now from this one. So, but thank you everyone for your comments. So next section.
All right. So I guess we kind of looked at a couple different things. One was like how could you, while maintaining some stress anonymity, because obviously in some departments or some professors, there's three PhD students. It's not hard for professors to figure out who the one who said so and so about it. So I guess one of the things we're thinking about is like talking to the field assistant or the graduate studies in that department, and at least trying to set a way to like work through some possible issues or mediate them. And another thing that came up was what happens when your advisor is seriously ill or dead because that significant change for the student and that be a mechanism or a trick kind of goes into an appropriate path. And then another thing is just like the frequency of communication could one not be sorely lacking in certain situations. And it's hard. Sometimes the advisor may be aware they're just extremely busy. Other times the advisor is negligent. So I guess approaching that for them would be a challenge.
Okay. I'd like to add to the midst of everybody being dead and other time while still having a graduate student, I guess that would also be, so it would be good to think about what would happen when you're inside and retire.
Or if you're moved from the university to get their college.
It's less extreme than those cases, but I feel like it would be helpful if students have some sense of what the etiquette is when a professor is on leave, right? Because, you know, we have some professors in our department when they're on leave, they respond to emails, and we have others that they're on leave and they're on leave and they don't want to respond to emails. So if there was some kind of policy or some kind of guide that can tell us, you know, how to navigate those kinds of situations. From, all the way from leave to death,
from this. Talk about guides for students. So, for this, are there guides for faculty, for professors, and how the do they get any information?
I can't actually, I don't know. I can't, I don't think there's anything like that in my department. But. Yeah, but I don't think there's any, but I don't think departments themselves have official, like, you know, but it is a good point, though, advisors, just because you were advised doesn't mean you know to be an advisor, just because, you know, same thing, like, not anyone can teach high school because they were high school teachers, so it is important that they be given some kind of instruction, but I don't think they are in many of the departments.
On that note, in food science, they do have, new faculty do get paired up with senior faculty to help them out with the transition.
Most departments, I mean, after that, I mentioned that point, it's an issue because I know in engineering, this is the thing with draft code, saying that you have taken the exam by the third year, and then it's being required. Like in engineering, historically, it's been much later, 4 years or 4.5, and say a year or a semester before you graduate. And a lot of faculty haven't, like, still, like, gotten to the concept that they need to take it by 3 years. So I was talking to someone, and this person said that they got an email from the grad school saying that you don't take your exam or you're out. And then they went and talked to their advisor, they're like, no way I'm going to take your exam. And
what happened was this person didn't want to fight it later than they expected the program. But at this point, we just had enough.
There were other issues that were there, obviously.
This was just a death in the pain connection. But in this case, if there's a rule that the doctor expects for them to follow, then those kind of things should be more or less set in stone for purpose. And those kind of things could be in a guide for purpose, for example. And that is something like, it might even be a cheat sheet, like a one-page document, you know, that this is all the things, like there are registration units that students use. We all are registered when we're in the semester. There's something called registration units. And most strong professors don't do it. That school has some problems with it. And then now they have to find catch up so that all the registration units are actually approved by the semester. And yep. There are other issues that we don't know about, but all of the players are there in the background. And faculty should be aware of that.
Okay. So we're now a bit over time, actually. So just ask that we get just brief summaries of anything that hasn't been already said from the remaining two sections, and we'll go to a brief open forum. So from this section, was there any comments that said from this section over here?
I'd like to remind everybody that one informal mechanism we have for showcasing and rewarding good advice.
Committee of students who spent a lot of thoughtful time and energy thinking about what constitutes good advising and mentorship and teaching across the disciplines. So that list exists. It is the criteria for deciding who gets the faculty student award.
How many last year we had at least 2,000. And
this has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.